Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review in for Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And, Ian, when it comes to good martinis, decisions by the D.C. government don't make the list very often, but it does today, thanks to the Washington Times story that reads, Washington, D.C. will drop its appeal of a federal court ruling that overturned the city's ban on carrying handguns in public. That, according to D.C. Attorney General Carl Racine. City attorneys will instead focus on defending concealed carry laws adopted by legislators in the months after U.S. District Court Judge Frederick Scullin Jr. declared the ban was unconstitutional. Up until the ruling in July, D.C. residents could only legally possess registered firearms in their homes. They couldn't take them out of their homes at all. So little by little, the Second Amendment is getting some fresh air in Washington, D.C. here, Ian.
Sip your good martinis, because this is good, not great. It is a step forward. So what you're seeing in D.C. is basically the local government cave on a six-year-old Second Amendment ruling, which was the Heller, the now famous Heller decision from the Supreme Court, which said that D.C. had violated Mr. Heller's Second Amendment rights with their firearms ban. D.C. has been slowly accepting that decision under a great deal of pressure. So what this new move says is that they're going to stop putting their efforts in defending a ban that is unlawful and turn their efforts toward enforcing their new concealed carry regulations. So what that'll look like is something like what you have in New York, where you don't have a firearms ban, but you have effectively a licensing and regulatory structure that is so onerous that it's extremely difficult to actually carry a firearm in the city. In New York City, for instance, one of my colleagues has followed this more closely, but it's several hundred dollars to go through the permitting and training and all the rest, so that it effectively boxes out anyone of reasonable or restricted means who might actually want to carry a firearm. So that's what you're going to see in D.C. All of that said, that's still ultimately able to be challenged as well. And what the D.C. Government's capitulation on this does indicate is the strength of Second Amendment sentiment, even in sort of one of the bastions of urban leftism.
Yeah, and there's a good book out there called Emily Gets Her Gun. She's a former Washington Times reporter who documented her entire process of trying to register a firearm in Washington, and it is quite a bureaucratic mess. As you mentioned, this certainly doesn't make gun owners truly free. It also says here in the current Washington Times piece, gun owners have criticized the permitting scheme as too restrictive, citing the fact that the Metropolitan Police Department requires proof of a good reason why a gun owner would need to carry a firearm for protection. So,
liable to be challenged at any moment.
Yeah, you have to think so. All right, on to the bad martini now. And sadly, we see this far too often, but it's happening once again at a university in Kenya. This is the CNN version of the story. A swarm of gunmen stormed a Kenya university before dawn Thursday, opening fire and taking hostages. At least 15 people were killed at Garissa University College. According to the Kenyan Interior Ministry, as many as 550 others are unaccounted for at the campus that had about 815 students, according to CNN affiliate Citizen TV. The other reports we're getting out of this, Ian, is that they essentially, this is Al-Shabaab, the terrorist based in Somalia, coming in and essentially saying, are you Muslim or Christian? If you're Christian, boom. They just shot him on the spot. There's dozens that are injured, and we can only pray for the safe release somehow of those that were abducted. But once again, it shows that the barbarism here knows no bounds.
It's absolutely horrific. And of course, it's a developing situation, so we're not clear on all of the details yet. But as you point out, the reports that are coming out suggest that this was not at all, as Al Jazeera put it, an indiscriminate attack. There was a great deal of discrimination going on and continuing to go on. It's a story that unfortunately is apropos for Holy Week, We talk a great deal about and think a great deal about religious liberty struggles here in the United States, and we'll get to some of that momentarily. But the extent of the freedom that we still have is extraordinary. It's unmatched anywhere else in the world, anywhere else in history. And what we see when we look across the Middle East is precisely the opposite. Some of the most vile, horrendous restrictions on the fundamental right of conscience that puts Christians in Kenya, Christians in Saudi Arabia, Christians in Iraq and Syria, as we've seen particularly over the past several months with ISIS, in life-threatening danger. They spend their days wondering if today will be their last. But one of the things that you see, I had the privilege of talking with a prominent priest who operates one of the few remaining Christian congregations in Baghdad, who has said the situation there, and I'm sure it's similar across the region, is one, in fact, of joy, of incredible simplicity, of a true sort of purity of faith, one that's refined by the harrowing circumstances that believers face each and every day. So it's this event in Kenya is a reminder to those of us who don't have to suffer these things that we Christians are in a community that extends far beyond the walls of our local church or our local community, and that we have a responsibility and a prayerful duty to those who are suffering across the world. As I said, it's apropos that this is happening at this moment in the church calendar.
Very well said, Ian. On to the crazy martini now, and you mentioned discrimination in terms of how al-Shabaab was killing folks at this university. The big debate still in this country is discrimination, allegedly, over the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Indiana legislators today say they've made their fixes, although they didn't go into much detail about what they are. The media in this story have been probably worse than we even expected. Essentially, many different outlets went trolling around for different businesses who would refuse to cater a gay wedding. They found one in Walkerton, Indiana, which is in the northwest part of the state between Valparaiso and South Bend, and they found a father and daughter who operate a restaurant called Memories Pizza, and she simply said, "We're Christians, we don't feel comfortable catering that type of event, but anyone is welcome to come into the shop and get a pizza." The vitriol here is hard to summarize. They've had threats of death, many different death threats, threats of arson to the establishment. They've essentially closed for the time being, and they believe as a result of all the threats they're getting, they may never reopen. So once again, the tolerance is so obvious in this one.
Absolutely. And the last story certainly puts this one in perspective. But in the context of American history, in the context what we expect in America, it's hard to find words to describe how despicable what has happened to the O'Connors in Walkerton, Indiana, has been over the past 24 hours. So as you said, Greg, effectively a reporter just goes driving from establishment to establishment looking for someone who's apparently foolish enough to speak on the record, because you'd have to be at this point. She finds Crystal O'Connor, who says, "We're Christians, we wouldn't cater a gay wedding hypothetically. It's not like anyone has come in and asked them to do this and been turned away. This is entirely hypothetical." It gets reported as first Indiana business to refuse service to gays. I mean, it's just an extraordinary, misleading bout of reportage by not just left-wing media, but mainstream, just about everyone. And the result has been some of the most vile online attacks. Their Memories Pizza's Google page was hacked. Their reviews on Yelp, I think there's something like 2,000 reviews now. You'll be unsurprised to know that most of them are single-star reviews, and most of them are also filled with content not suitable for the workplace. And as you say, they don't know if they're going to reopen again because they've been getting death threats. It's extraordinary that you have a group of people who pretend to be agitating for love and tolerance and respect. And the way to do that is literally to run the owners of a pizza party in a town of 2,500 people out of town. What's happened is simply unconscionable. It's a reminder that it's a reminder of two things. One is the left has no concept, at least this group of sort of activist leftists has no concept of religious liberty. It's an idea that doesn't exist in their minds as something fundamental, despite the fact that as soon as religious liberty goes, all other liberties will go as well. It's the fundamental ground of the liberal democracy that we love and cherish in the United States, and the consequences will redound to their detriment as well. Second point, this goes to show that the Religious Freedom Restoration Acts being passed in all of these states and at the federal level have never been more important when you have mobs like this, not Christian mobs or mobs of religious believers going after LGBT establishments, any of this. I would challenge anyone to name an establishment operated by a member of the gay community that has experienced anything like the odium that's come down on the O'Connors. In fact, it's religious liberty that's under threat, and that's why these RFRA laws are so important. That's what the left has proved by its behavior over the past 24 hours. They've made the case for us, so I suppose we have them to thank for that.
Yeah, certainly the case, and an excellent point that you've made, and the founders certainly made, Ian, and that's that there are certain inalienable rights that come from God, and the second that that is no longer recognized and people think they come from government, then those rights can be taken away in a heartbeat.
That's right.
Ian, hate to leave the week on such a sobering note. There will be no Three Martini Lunch tomorrow in observation of Good Friday. Ian, have a blessed Easter, and we'll talk to you down the road.
You as well, Greg.
Ian Tuttle of National Review, and for Jim Garrity, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today, and Jim and I will be back on Monday for the next Three Martini Lunch.